Welcome to the Cycling Central podcast, renamed the Cadel Evans podcast henceforth. I am Al Hines. First up, an apology for last week's unexpected Thursday sans broadcast. We were just as disappointed as you were, maybe more so. But when a pigeon sets the nest, it's among the SBS broadcast infrastructure. What more can you do? Anyway, we're back and we're G'd. This week on the show, it's the end game for Evans as Australia's only tour-winning dog protector from Barwon Heads calls time on his career. Dennis defends Port's punches, Ali Foreman style, on Old Wollong to win the Tour Down Under. UniSA shines bright under the unusually cool Adelaide summer sun. And on that note, Jackie Bobby, Bobridge that is, readies to ride his bike for 60 minutes. And with me to talk that and more, it's the usual trio for once in a while. And we've lost Kath Bicknell, but we've gained Rob Arnold, Anthony Tan, who's little patience for those that snore, Philip Gomes, a man who's said to have been programmed with discarded Twitter beta test lines to prepare himself for his social media future, and returning from a month's absence, as I mentioned, the author of Australia's Cycling Bible Ride magazine, Rob Arnold. Guys, welcome aboard.
Thank you, Al.
Thanks, Alan.
Beep.
Alex. Not Alan.
Yeah,
that's a good start. That's Rob getting the name wrong.
Yeah,
sorry
about
that. It's my first.
That's what happens when Rob has a hiatus.
Yeah, you can't even remember anyone's name.
I haven't stopped. I just didn't drive.
Well, we've got Anton Tan, Roberto Arnold, and
Filippo Gomez.
Pippo.
Yeah,
Pippo Gomez.
Yeah.
Guys, just to start things off.
Enough about us.
Most important tool for covering an event like the Tour Down Under. What was in the rucksack, Tanny, that sort of saved your life?
An iPhone, and you always need a charger.
Yeah, chargers.
Because, you know, the batteries don't last very long these days.
Do you have one of those battery packs set up on your iPhone?
No. One of our colleagues, Aaron S. Lee, you need to mention the middle initial.
Well, his first name is actually Shane.
Right.
But he changed his first name to Aaron. So okay. And then the S moved to the middle.
Yeah. Well, he's got something that can recharge the battery 2.5 times. But
I had a day where my battery went dead, and it was actually quite bliss. And I realised that the most important tool of watching a bike race is your eyes.
Mm.
Yeah,
those are definitely helpful. Mm. Although that's not to take away from blind people who are listening. No. They can still enjoy bike racing.
Yeah.
No, not really, actually.
Yeah, they can listen to the mellifluous.
No, but seriously, phones. They're pretty much the tool that you need now.
Yeah, I've dispensed with a voice recorder now.
Yeah. Yeah. I was doing Twitter, although I'm not very good at Twitter.
You're good enough.
But, and Facebook and website updates, and it was constant.
Yeah.
It was a big week for me. I don't think I slept.
Bit of tethering on your phone,
probably.
Maybe
I called you Alan.
Yeah, well, exactly. That is definitely my name. Phil, I mean, you don't get out as much as you would like, but I feel like you would definitely agree with that phone comment. But is there anything else that we're sort of missing off this list of
feet?
Important tools?
No. I think the phone these days is pretty well it. Right. I think when I went up to the
Cairns.
Mountain Bike World Cup in Cairns, yeah.
Yep.
Right, so I had the extra battery for the mobile. And that made a big, just massive difference. You're just never out of juice. So, you know, it's that and connectivity. And, of course, you know, the phone doesn't work unless you've got connectivity. So that's the most important thing.
So basically be with Telstra or something.
Or just whatever. Whatever works.
Yeah, whatever
doesn't
works.
Really matter.
So. All right, guys, on that note, let's stop talking about how other people can do our jobs better than us and get into it. Adelaide. Well, got that off my chest. It's been a fantastic start to the World Tour season.
Feel the rush.
With the Tour Down Under, concluding Sunday, won by 24-year-old Rowan Dennis, who moved to BMC in the European summer. And he snuck away from the peloton on stage 3 to Paracom, off script slightly, but successful all the same. He then held the lead to Wollongong, where Richie Port threw 6 different kitchen sinks at him, a few from IKEA. But the Tasman's efforts were not enough, and Rowan held on to a narrow victory. 2 seconds was all it was between him and Richie Port. Another close finish of the Tour Down Under after last year. Tanny, you're obviously there. Rob, you're also there as well. But Tanny, we'll start with you. Rowan Dennis. I mean, this is big for him. First Tour Down Under.
Yeah, huge, Al. This is now the eighth time the TDU has finished within, the first and second has finished within 8 seconds of each other. So, I mean, it's no longer an anomaly. I would say, though, that, Dennis obviously captured the lead on Paracombe, but he won the Tour Down Under on Wollunga. So, I still think, it could have gone either way, as I wrote in my blog this week, but I just felt Dennis, it's also symbolic, you know, there's a passing of the baton between him and Evans, and more so, I think he could actually be a leader quite soon at BMC, depending on how Van Garderen goes, but... the future's so bright for Rowan Dennis.
I mean, Rob, we probably we should remind ourselves that, you know, Rowan has actually been in Europe as a sort of a professional now for quite some time. I mean, he went very early to ride with Rabobank as an under 23 and sort of skipped that sort of apprenticeship with AIS a little bit. I mean, he did do it, but he did also start his career earlier than some. So this is now, you know, he's 24, but he's actually been...
He's been around for a long time.
He's been around for a long time.
I'll just pick you up. You said he snuck away from the peloton. I thought he absolutely went blasting past and made a big show of it. I thought his stage win was fabulous.
Yep.
It was very exciting. I don't think people were expecting it. You know, there was... The selection had been made, and we saw Pozzovivo and Tom Dumoulin and Richie and Cadell just sort of eyeing each other off. And then out of the peloton came this red dash, and he flew past everyone, and he opened up such a lead that it was possible for Cadell to chase him and not chase him down. Mm. And for the first time in BMC's history, finished first and second in a World Tour race. And they held that on GC for a while until Richie's big foray on Wollunga Hill. So that was interesting in itself. Going back to your question was, his long history in the sport.
Has he already served his apprenticeship, I suppose? I mean, in tiny sense, can he sort of go on now this year even and start to knock on the door of some bigger races?
I'm going to gloat a little bit because I went to the Dunkray Velodrome when he was 15 or 16 and I watched him ride a junior pursuit, and I just thought his style was magnificent, and I called him and did an interview and found out where his background was. And he came from swimming, and he was a talent ID in SASI, South Australian Institute of Sport, or Sports Institute. And he came to the bike, and he fell onto it perfectly with a beautiful position, fantastic pedalling style. He rode fast 3,000 metres as a junior. And I said to Alan Piper that the next Tour Down Under, watch out for Rowan Dennis. He's going to be – watch this name. It's going to be a big one. And he subsequently signed with a couple of pro teams. And he had a false start with what was to be a Fly Virgin V Blue. I can't remember the name of the defunct team.
Pegasus Cycling.
But it didn't happen. And he ended up doing a makeshift year as stagiaire at Rabobank, the development team. And we see what's happened now. I mean, he's fantastic. He's great to watch. He's great talent on the podium. He's interesting to interview. And it's only the beginning.
This you mentioned it, and it's about his history. Mm. Now, one of the things that struck me when I was watching Rowan, especially win that stage, is I wondered whether he would have won that race if he was still with Garmin.
I think so, because I walked into the Hilton when I arrived in Adelaide. The first person I saw was Rowan, and we had a bit of a chat, and he's fun because he's got a bit of mongrel in him. And he was saying, you know, if Cadell shows one sign of weakness, I'm going to be there. I'm going to be there to pick up the slack. But the leader was Cadell in his final stage race. And Rowan respected that, and he rode accordingly. Had he been at Garmin or what's become of it? I think so. I spent a day with Robbie Hunter in the Cannondale Garmin car. And it was a great deal of fun. He really got the guys motivated. And Nathan Haas and Ryder Hesjedal and Alex Howes, those guys just admitted that they didn't have what it needed last week. But I think that there's a fair bit of slack given to the Garmin team, but it's not really appropriate. They've got great management, an interesting infrastructure. It's just that BMC, they nailed it this week. And I feel for them because they lost Campbell Flakemore. We probably would have seen a much more interesting red show on Wollunga had Campbell been there.
The reason I ask that is because, you know, my outside interpretation of that move is that Dennis is better placed with BMC in terms of development than he would have been at Garmin.
I love the fact that he started the climb that he won on, last place in the peloton. And if you watch them as they, and it was a dead set sprint lead out to the base of Paracombe. And we saw Peter Stettina, or Stettina, however you say it. He almost went off the road. He went into that final turn so rapidly. And then it was up for Cadell to take over for BMC. And he did an outstanding job. And then Rowan told me he paced himself past the peloton, Moncuti style, you know, and slowly picked off all of the targets until there was the four up ahead, and he, by the time he got there, he must have just been surging. It was a fantastic stage.
Yeah, for me, what I liked about Dennis's move that day, Rob, was his intuition. And I'm not sure whether I see guys from... I think Garmin allows that one team. I don't think, enhances their race now is Sky. I know it feels like I'm bashing Sky, but really when you spoke with Richie after Wollonga, he said he had a long conversation with Kerrison. Tim Kerrison, their sports scientist, was there at TDU. He's obviously a very valuable asset to Richie, but he did say, look, he told him when to go. He crunched all the numbers. He put it into the computer and told him to go around 1,300 metres to go. I mean, you just don't hear that sort of sentiment from Dennis after he won the stage. He just said, look, I was told to go early at the bottom of Paracombe. I couldn't go. Then I waited, and then I saw my moment and I went. You know, that it's quite chalk and cheese in terms of, you know, that sentiment you hear from them. And I like that mongrel about Dennis, and I think that will... you know, that will put him in good stead when he's up against guys like Froome and Quintana in years to come.
I mean, it is good to see the way he's settling at BMC, though. I mean, I feel like ever since he made that mid-season transfer, he's really just found a rich vein of form. You know, from just even the World Championships, I mean, that was obviously big, but you get the sense that he's a lot more of a solid place. I don't know if Garmin gave him the value and respect that maybe he deserved, or maybe they did, but he just seems totally there. He's going places, and it's you get the sense that as well, that BMC has found someone that maybe can take a little bit of the mantle from Evans as he sort of retires, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But
there is a lot to say about Rowan, and he's had, you know, let's say, to be honest, when he was young, he had anger management issues, and we talked about that, and he's learned from that. And it's not like... He was aware of it, and he was frustrated by it. He was given some good protocols to overcome that, and he really does do it well. And he's impressive to chat to, and he's very professional in his approach. And when he talks about his cycling, he does analyse it very well, much like Kerrison. I think where they, if you want to pick holes in the Sky tactics, I think they did a really good job. But what they discounted on that day to Wollonga was the fact that the climb was on with a tailwind, and that changed everything. Had it been a headwind, then Rowan would have been able to stay with Richie because he just had to follow the wheel. And for example, little details that any amount of pre-planning can't account for.
Well, it's funny because Wollonga, I mean, let's talk about Wollonga, and let's talk about Port's ride there, because he was very impressive, and it was a real sort of show of something maybe that we don't see. I mean, you know, in the Evans years, I feel like it's been so shaded by Evans hanging on to wins and getting wins through time trials. This is kind of like a real display from Port 2 years in a row now, where he's gone on Wollonga and just made an absolute spectacle of it all. But
he had to do that.
But you know,
realise that he would have won by 2 seconds or 4 seconds had not been for time bonuses. It's just interesting to point that out. But the race had time bonuses, it's random.
Exactly.
It's an obtuse fact.
Wollonga, it's steeper, Rob, in the first 2 kilometres, a little bit, and then it sort of flattens out. I mean, we talked about it, you know, should he have just thrown the kitchen sink at it a little bit earlier?
No, because the man is not a machine. The man has finite energy. And the man is has been studied very well by Kerrison, and therefore Richie was aware of how much he had. I mean, what if they stayed away and they had that split that they had just with 8k to go leading to Wollonga, and Astana threw everything, and Lars Boom caused the echelon. That was fantastic, and that that 3 or 4 seconds that they had as an advantage could have easily blown to 30 seconds and Richie would have been totally isolated.
Yeah. Mm.
So it's racing, and that's why it was such a great stage. And I think that's why people keep going back to that race. If you go to that hill and you drove up with a GoPro out either window and slow-moed it, and I keep saying this to people who ask if cycling's peaking in Australia, if you slow-moed that down and counted the amount of money that was spent on cycling equipment that lay beside the side of the road while fans screamed at the riders as they went past, there was millions and millions and millions of dollars worth of bikes. And people go there, they ride the course, they understand the hill, they watch this thing and they get passionate about it. And that what makes it even more makes them all even more passionate is the fact that they then see the real guys do it and they hit it so hard and they make such a great show of it. That's why the Tour Down Under is what it is.
I mean, just on that note, Rob, but maybe I'll ask Tanny. I mean, one of the questions that was put, always being so continually debated about, you know, and off that success is whether the date change is appropriate. And the UCI obviously is pushing, well, they would like to see a shortened calendar, I suppose, a truncated calendar.
You answer it, Phil.
That would put the race, presumably, not in January, but...
It would ruin it.
I think in the near term, I don't think that's an issue that we really need to talk about. I think I think what Tanny talked about last week was more important, which is, do we make Wollongong the finale?
Mm.
Given what you just said, Rob.
Mm. I think you sort of need Sunday to get over the hangover.
You want to proceed?
I think you need Wollongong to be on the Saturday, so that people can sort of, because it's so exciting.
Yeah,
and then still have a little bit of cycling to watch. I generally don't like that last stage, but this one was so fast, and the sprint was probably the only anticlimax of that final stage.
No, I thought the sprint was pretty good myself.
I mean,
I just found the whole day anticlimactic. I mean, the people turned up because it was Cadell's last World Tour race, almost his last official engagement, if you like. Okay, there's the Cadell race. But really, you know, they came out to see him, to say their goodbye. And I just felt, year after year, we see the same thing and it ends in a sprint. I mean, great for the sprinters. They get another opportunity. But is it what the Tour Down Under fans want? As Rob said, those fans on Wollongong, they are so... At that point in time, they're just so impassioned. They're so vociferous. And then it almost feels like the ones who are on the Sunday, there's a bit of a come down.
But I think there's a place for those sort of circuit races, end of races, because that is not meant to be an addition to the, I think a lot of people would say that the race sort of concludes on Saturday, which I think it does in a lot of ways, but Sunday is a celebration of the whole week. It brings together everything, and, you know, there's a sprint finish, and it's a fast finish, but it's also a chance for the riders to sort of get a bit of, you know, plaudits for all the efforts they've done over the week. And I think that those things, street circuits in the middle of Adelaide, are you saying we need that
in every stage race, Al? I mean, if that's your belief, I mean, should we have a little exhibition at the end of Paris-Nice, at the end of, you know, Torino, you know, Tour de Suisse, Dauphiné, you know? I don't understand this need for the Tour de France version of riding onto the Champs-Élysées. That's okay. That's after 3,500 kilometres. They deserve a parade because they deserve to be adulated for riding 3.5 weeks at full throttle.
I think when cycling's about climbing and sprinting and GC riding and teamwork and everything, and I think we just got to see a good sprint. And they extended the circuit. It wasn't just the standard one.
Didn't you say it was anticlimactic?
The sprint was, but you've got to give them an opportunity.
But I think the reality as well of bike races is, and we've got to acknowledge this, is that, you know, they're driven by tourism dollars. And, you know, a street circuit in the middle of Adelaide is entirely about that, you know. And I think Paris-Nice can exist without that because it has so much else going for it. But look at the AmGam Tour of California. Look at the Tour Down Under. Look at, other races of that, I suppose, that echelon where they are much more driven by the regional authorities. And I think... it makes a lot more sense for me. And in that sense, maybe it doesn't do much for the race, but maybe it does more for the race more broadly as a tourism spectacle.
I stood on the barricades and they whizzed past me with literally 10 or 15 centimetres away from my face, and it was terrifying because they were going that fast. And it was thrilling. I mean...
You felt the rush.
Yeah, I did. Essentially, yeah, that's true. I hate the song. I have to reiterate that. Please, can we ban that song and then that race will be perfect? But I don't know. I don't know if there's a real need to... There's other things we could criticise rather than the final stage of the
sometime, though. I mean, to stick with the same format, you know, that Turda was adamant about never making Wollongong a hilltop finish until there was so much crowd support for it that he relented. And look at how the race has improved as a result.
Look, there's always room for experimentation in any race. I don't think you can write it off.
They are selling so many holiday packages, and that grandstand opportunity with the repeated, you know, they had 20 laps.
So you got to see them. It's for the VIPs and all the hoi polloi, so I get it.
VIPs. There's paying customers, people coming along, and that's something that bike racing doesn't get a lot of, you know.
Anyway, one final thing, guys. I don't want to dwell on that any longer, but UniSA Australia, I mean, I just want to mention them because they really defined the week in a lot of ways. Bob Ridge from the opening stage, that breakaway getting away. You don't see that as much in World Tour events these days, especially this early in the year. We used to see that Tour down quite a lot, but not so much anymore.
And Young Steele picking up a stage win, which was impressive too.
Yeah. So, I mean, the what they did throughout the entire week, even Haig, you know, didn't get the best young rider, but you saw how much he was fighting for position in the echelons, and but for probably a lack of teammates, he probably would have been up there again as well. So a fantastic exhibition of what young Australians are going to be doing in a few years' time. But also maybe let's just talk about Von Hoff, because we'll talk about Bobbage a little bit. But why isn't this guy in the World Tour, Rob?
It's just an unlucky set of circumstances. Poor communication from Jonathan Voorhees is what yielded his... No, you know, non-contract. He ended up at a team, so, and he's riding with NFTO.
NTFO.
And NFTO. You know, it gives him an opportunity to keep on racing, and he should win a few things in England, and he should catch the attention of people. When he was very fast, and it's a shame that crash got the headlines, because his sprint was outstanding, but the crash was also damn spectacular, and I think you got about 10 trillion views.
Gazillion.
Yeah.
Officially.
One and metric gazillion.
And that brings us to Jeremy Roy, the king of the camera. I love this guy. You know, this is a talking point of the Tour Down Under. You have this hype around Velon and what they're going to do to change the whole world of cycling, and instead of them even making one skerrick of a press release of what they're going to do for the first World Tour race of the season. Okay, even if they said they're going to do nothing, at least they should have said that. But instead, one guy, Jeremy Roy, Roy, if you want to say it in Aussie, he wrote to the UCI, wrote to the organisers, and got approval to ride with a camera, and he made his edit after the stage every day. And good on him. You know, I think his crash footage, where he somehow miraculously makes it past, has had 300,000 views or something in a few days. And there we go. That's another really positive point from the first World Tour race of the year.
All right, guys.
I've talked too much. I'll go home now. See ya.
Bye, Rob.
Rob's now left the studio, so that's good. Jesus, getting a bit, you know, too much Rob in this podcast. Let's finish the Tour Down Under, the Robcast, indeed.
The Robcast, yes.
Let's move on. Yes, you are. Let's move on to some talk about the hour record. The hour. Well, we don't really need to tell you about the course. It's on a velodrome. The time, well, that's fixed. But the distance, somewhere over 51.852 kilometres would be nice. That's the current record. And what will it require? Well, a finely tuned Cervelo bicycle, a sound pacing strategy, and a thoroughbred athlete capable of putting out more than 380 watts consistently. Is Jack Borbridge that athlete? And we'll find that out on Saturday night on the Disc Velodrome, the Derebin, I can't remember what it is, but Disc Velodrome, we'll call it that. Guys, Bobbridge after the TDU, we didn't talk about him at all in the TDU, but he had a fantastic Tour Down Under. He was going in the breakaways all day. fine-tuning his form, I guess. Rob, you spoke to him.
I can still talk. I can talk a long time about this.
Yeah, yeah. But
I love the hour record.
I talked to him for 20 minutes last night, and I found it fascinating. Yeah. I popped it up on ridemedia.com.au. That's ridemedia.com.au.
slash Bobbridge.
I've beaten the unbeatable before. Right. No, that's one of the quotes. And it's true, because everyone thought that Boardman Superman position time for the individual pursuit would never be broken. And he did. He got a freakish day where the conditions were perfect and he broke that.
Yep.
And and that's worth remembering.
Yep.
I'll let someone else talk and I'll come back in a little minute to offer my contributions.
Well, Gomi, you love the hour record because you're sadistic and you like to watch people ride around velodromes lots of times. But
Al has mixed feelings about the hour record.
No, but, you know, Bobbridge, based on his form, he's got a very good chance, and his history as an IP rider. Is he going to notch over 52 kilometres?
Yes, I believe he will. I mean, I think he's got the track pedigree. I mean, how can you go past that? I think if he can do a pursuit to the standard that he did in an individual pursuit and set a world record in doing that, and as Rob said, you know, beating a record that a lot of people thought was effectively unbeatable, I think he's obviously got the engine, and I think historically he's proven he's got the engine. And then when you back that up with how he rode at the Tour Down Under, then you see this guy is the real thing. And I look, with all due respect to Matthias Brandle, you know, he's a wonderful rider, great breakaway rider, and I think he's the kind of guy we're going to be seeing at the front of races for years, right? He's going to be he's got a bit of the Enzi about him. And you know, so he's a great guy, great young guy. But what he doesn't have is the kind of pedigree that somebody like a Jack Bobbridge has, right? I think Jack is so good on the track; he knows how to ride on the track, and I think that's going to serve him in good stead. And then I think, obviously, we'll have to then enjoy Rowan Dennis trying to do the same thing, you know, what only a week or two afterwards. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. But you know, Jack said before he wants to put it out of reach, right? That's interesting to me, and the fact that he actually said that. You know, that's going to pose an interesting question, I think, for Rowan and quite possibly even Bradley Wiggins. Because I know that everybody's talking about Wiggins, you know, putting the record out of reach, but, you know, maybe Jack will do it.
Yeah, Tony, what do you reckon about the fact that he's ridden the Tour Down Under? Phil just mentioned that, but, you know, is preparing for a one-hour, you know, threshold effort, is that best prepared by doing five-hour days in the saddle at Tour Down Under?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm no sports scientist, but I did speak with Dave Sanders, and he said he'll be fine. You know, I mean, this is a guy who's done a number of years at World Tour level under his belt. Yes, he's got the pedigree as a pursuiter, you know, riding as a junior, riding 3K pursuits, then to 4K. So if someone says, oh, well, how can he do 13 times that distance? Well, These guys, the way they train, I mean, these are, you know, for the layperson, these guys, even though they ride 4K on the track in, you know, as a team pursuit under 4 minutes, they're track endurance athletes. So these guys specialize in going well past that 4K limit. And I see Jack, with respect to Brandle, I don't really think it's, you know, a question of if he can beat him. It's really by how much. And then also he seems to have been thinking about it more than Dennis. Dennis seemed to hop on the bandwagon after he heard that Bobbridge was interested in it. And perhaps Dennis will go for it again next year because he's, you know, he'll unless Wiggins just puts it into the stratosphere.
I talked to him about just because Jack Bobbridge, he won the opening stage. His team was on the front for the first three stages, and he had a real workout. But on the day to Wollonga, he was in the break with, first of all, with Greg Henderson, and then Hendy ended up Madison slinging him and say, all right, on your own. And it was obvious, a solid workout. It was literally a week and a few hours before his time on the track to break the hour. So I asked what he averaged for that whole stage. So that was 160 kilometres, I think. And he said, even considering the flat periods where he was putting out no wattage, his average was 325 watts. More or less. If he picked an hour window in there, then it'd be obviously higher than that, particularly when he was on his own in the wind. But then and he said he could hold it and he felt fairly comfortable. And even when the brake caught him, he sat on that brake and was able to follow wheels. So he still had plenty left in his legs. And to do the hour, he thinks at his weight at the moment, to break the record, he needs to do 385 watts for the average, which is if you've ridden a bike, if you get to 385 watts and hold it for a little while, you should just give yourself a pat on the back. You're doing really well. But to do it for an hour, I almost sort of dry reached when he was telling me that. I just thought, that makes me feel sick. My legs are tired. I can't get up now. From hearing it.
You get the taste of blood in your mouth.
I had a sore throat, but I was just thinking about that concept. It's hardcore. And what he's doing is amazing. Mm. But let's also remember that when a bike rider is getting ready for a big event, they're not putting their legs up and twiddling their thumbs and making sure their body's nice and rested. They're out flogging themselves and making sure that their legs are ready. Mm. So the Tour Down Under did serve as a great prelude.
I think Brendler talked about that as well when he did the hour record, because he was injured in the early part of the season or mid-season, I think, and then he came back after the Tour de France and he did quite a few races before the hour record. Mm. And he said that that served him in good stead for that he had some late miles in his legs that he wouldn't ordinarily have.
Yeah. One other thing is that track athletes, those who have come from a track background, so good at hitting their targets. You look at all the past Australian track champions and they're so good at getting to that, getting themselves as good as they can be on the day. That's probably the difference between, say, a Brandl and a Bobridge. For me, you know, you just look at the way Stuart O'Grady always hit his targets, and even Mick Rogers from a track background, he was so good in getting himself ready for the World Time Trial Championship. So
even the way they walk the line, you know, they say we're going to call a 3:55, and if they call a 3:55, the coach has set that as their schedule, and they walk the line to know if the rider's up or down. They generally get a 3:55, and wasn't that long ago where to go under 4 minutes was unbelievable. And now we're talking, anyway, but the point being that Jack will probably be called
on his
to beat
schedule.
51.8.
Yeah.
But I'd like him to do 53.11 just so that it's like that gearing. Sort of a nice round number that in cycling.
So if above that, just break a little bit.
You're writing a headline already, aren't you?
Yeah, oh,
I think
you
are. Dear. I don't know. come on. I'll go 53.11 as my prediction. What are you going to go, Phil?
Oh, man, I don't know.
Can I host this, Alan? Yeah.
I actually don't know.
Yeah. I'm not... Yeah. I am not totally convinced that he'll definitely get the record.
Wow.
I think people are underestimating how far 51.852 is. It's not going to be like, I don't necessarily think he's going to blow it out of the water. I think he might just get it, but it could also go the other way.
Send your correspondence to al.hines at...
Alex is the one who's anti-hour, and I bet you're thinking, I wish I was there. It's going to be a thrill.
Oh, yeah.
I'm taking my son down. I'm going to be sitting there. I'm going to be...
I think the hype surrounding not just Bobridge doing it, the way that he's let in off the TDU, the hype off that, you know, the fact that now you just get the sense that he's in good form, that it's going to be at the track nationals, there's going to be a whole lot of people there. It's going to be a good spectacle, and I'll just say this, it's going to be on Nine. I think maybe
it's being broadcast, is it?
Streaming,
I think. Yeah.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah, yeah. So,
but I'm still going.
So if you're in Australia, you can get access to it that way. But guys, we'll leave it there with the hour record, and just a reminder to everyone that we are on SBS, also streaming Rowan Dennis's, and we'll talk about Dennis's
next week
ahead of his attempt. But that will be as exciting in Switzerland when he lines up with BMC on a team machine, or I guess he'll be a time machine. What's that?
With jet lag.
With jet lag.
I know he should be over it by then. He'll be fine. Yeah. He's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. He won't be there to watch Jack.
Who's firing off the starting gun, Al?
Are you?
For Rowan?
Is it?
I don't know. Andy Reese?
No. Cadell is he?
Cadell, yeah. So from what we've heard, yes. Cadell will be...
So he's firing the gun into the air.
He won't be shooting Rowan.
It sounds like a bit like Greg LeMond's story.
Right? Yes, that's right.
We've managed to keep Anthony quiet. Can I ask Anthony our prediction for Bobridge?
He's going to do 55. My final word about the hour is that history will judge just how good these performances are, because I think, lurking in the background. I mean, Wiggins, he's not racing much on the road this year. I think he's going to give it a really good nudge, and I think that will be the judge of just how good
any of these performances.
So he's going to go 55-11, is he?
58. Sergei Gonchar.
I'm doing in jokes.
58-10.
Yeah.
Can you even have a 10 at the back?
No.
It becomes...
I think they do on BMX.
Maybe on BMX.
Yeah.
Not on a road bike. Anyway, finally, we've got one more race to talk about, and then we are wrapping it up. But we'll get there right now. Well, 174 kilometres around Geelong. It's a hilly finale. It's along the Great Ocean Road. It's the Cadell Evans Great Ocean Road Race. That's a mouthful, but it is live on Sunday. There's a women's race on Saturday. And look, it's going to be a fitting farewell, a little bit of a parade lap for Cadell, who lives, of course, in Barwon Heads. Mike Tomalaris will be there Sunday, providing on-the-ground reports from Cadell's farewell race with you and reports on Cycling Central. But guys, just a few questions about this race. First of all,
what time does it start?
How long is this race, do you think, for this world? Because it sounds like a great concept, but do you think it's going to be here for 10 years, or is it going to be here this year and then a bit of an up in the air sort of?
I tried to plan my adventure for the weekend, and I couldn't find anywhere what time it started. I called the race director, Scott Sunderland, and I asked what time it started or finished, and he said that's on the site, and it wasn't. But anyway, that's neither here nor there.
I guess what's odd
is that there's a huge fanfare around it, and they've invested a lot of money in it, and it should be a good race, and it's great to have another thing on the calendar and for more cycling to be coming to Australia. But I think they seem to have rushed it, and I hope I'm going to eat my words on Sunday, because I'm sure it's going to be a big carnival atmosphere, but it feels weird.
No, I think it's a good follow-up to the Tour Down Under, because, again, what it does is it brings a little bit of a festival atmosphere to cycling. So it's an inclusive event, men's, women's elite racing, but there's also stuff on the calendar for the punters. So everybody gets to enjoy a good weekend of bike racing and hang out with the pros, in a sense. So I think that makes it a good event. What you're talking about, by the way, with times and dates and stuff like that, that race isn't the only one, man. There's a lot of races that, you know, they have their websites up and you go, hey, what time's this race? I mean, it's just like, what's the date? And it's actually not there. You go to Giro website and it doesn't actually have the date. It has a countdown timer, 153 days to the Giro. And I'm like, how many days is 153 days?
What is it? So they only release like four stages or five stages. I don't know what's with that. Like, forget the suspense. People want to know when they're going to watch. They want to know the parkour, you know.
That's it. So, but anyway, so they're not alone in that respect. But
I think anyone who went to Geelong in 2010 will be back. No, if everyone who went to Geelong in 2010 is back, then it'll be an absolute outstanding success.
Yeah. There's a few people who live there as well.
I think at least the first year, because it is effectively Cadell's send-off, will be good. I think only time will tell how the event sticks on the Australian cycling calendar for that January.
Mm. Yeah, I completely agree, Phil. The first year will be good because it's bye-bye Cuddles, but the second and subsequent years will be the true test of its status and whether its longevity, you know. And I think the best thing if it does become perhaps part of the World Tour.
Yes.
Because the teams are here. The teams are here.
I don't think it needs part of the World Tour. I think it's good that we've got so many domestic teams racing. I think that, you know, there's going to be a big shake-up. You know, guys like, is Jack Haig racing? There's going to be some people from the Australian NRS who are going to put on a big show. And I think that's going to force the hand of the World Tour riders who think that if they just think they're just going to cruise, they're going to... They don't want to be embarrassed. So they'll put on an equal fight. And then afterwards, after it's all said and done, David Tanner's going to win and that'll be really good.
There you heard it. But it's interesting because it's sort of like you've got the Tour Down Under, which is a six-day stage race, and then... Effectively, what follows up the Cadell Road Race is another stage race in the Herald Sun Tour. So I reckon that race, if it does stick, it sticks becoming a good quality UCI race with maybe a mix of World Tour UCI Pro Conti type riders who will show up for a good high quality one day race with a mix of NRS teams as well. Mm. So I think it has a potential, if they get the mix of teams and riders right, to be a good, solid one-day race between the TDU and the Herald Sun Tour.
Yeah.
With a UC, with a good UCI,
yeah,
UCI
absolutely.
Standing.
Yeah.
I like the idea of World Tour teams racing against our domestic squads and Pro Conti squads. It's
good
more in terms of its financial longevity. You know, those races which aren't part of the World Tour often struggle. You know, particularly in Europe, we've seen a number go, you know, in recent years, just because they just struggled to, if teams are not mandated, obliged to go, then sometimes they just don't bother going.
Yeah. So Phil, when Cadell retires, is that the end of like what happens in Cycling Australia? Do we just sort of like, everyone just sort of packs up and...
No. Yeah, we're going to have a Barbie. Beers.
Yeah, that's right.
But then we're going to throw a BMC on the Barbie.
But right? I mean, that's sports pretty much.
How will Cadell cope hosting a Barbie of 50,000 people?
He'll be all right. No, he'll be all right. Look.
He's ready. He's ready to relax.
He's ready to relax.
But I did an interview after Wollonga. We spent 45 minutes together, and he walked into the room, and he'd just gotten out of the ice bath. He had two more race days in his life, and he was in the ice bath. You know, he's still wanting to talk about his SRM data.
Yeah.
I feel like saying, mate, go and have a beer, relax, you know, take it easy, just enjoy it, just soak it all up. But I think he's going to turn up on Sunday. He's going to put on a show. And maybe the whole bunch will just be sitting there trying to hold his wheel like Contador and everyone when he went to Galibia in 2011.
Yeah.
We might see one of those remarkable days.
We may,
Cadell period for Australian cycling is going to be very interesting. But I think Rob mentioned it earlier. We talked about this. In some ways, we saw at the Tour Down Under probably a passing of the baton. If you will, so we've got Richie in the near term as a guy who can do well in Grand Tour races and high quality European 6-day races, and then of course we've got somebody like Rowan Dennis who's sort of the next age group behind Richie, and then behind Rowan Dennis we've got young talent like Jack Haig and Rob Power. So I think in terms of GC succession, you know, there's definitely stuff happening there. Whether those guys will be able to convert is one thing. I think in terms of having roller talent, Australia's always had that.
But
so
I suppose my
we'll
question...
have other types of riders who may capture the Australian public's imagination, who is not a Tour de France rider, even though I know that, you know, that's really the thing to win.
Yeah, that's my question really, Phil, because it's not the... I don't get the sense that we're running out of talent. There's going to be a talent gulf, but more that there's going to be a Cadell Evans gulf, and that's the thing that we have built.
It's a challenge for Australian sport, and it's a challenge for Australian cycling fans to see how sophisticated we become in terms of following cycling, and whether we're able, or the large majority of cycling fans are able to understand that Australian cycling has always existed beyond Cadell Evans.
Mm. But Australian cycling fans are probably not the issue. It's more people who are watching the Australian Open who are interested in...
But I think Richie's got that, what is it, that panache, that je ne sais quoi. He can come forward and he's sort of... I think Richie's more likeable than Cadell. First of all, because he always looks like he's smiling, even when he's suffering.
I wouldn't say likeable. It's more approachable.
Right, absolutely, yeah. I mean, right? Cadell's very special in a lot of ways. Very.
yes.
Richie are poaching Anthony Tan or vice versa. That's an interesting one. I saw a bit of that.
But I think Rowan is somebody who is incredibly marketable.
Mm. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I think from being he's very articulate in terms of his answers to most questions. I think in a way, from what I've seen anyway, in a way that Richie isn't. Richie is a lot more
controlled.
Down home, a little bit more Aussie.
Plain speaking.
Says I mean a bit.
Rowan, you sort of, I watched him on the podium wondering when he was going to sort of, you know, let the wrong words out.
But he didn't.
He managed it really well.
Yeah.
He's fun.
Yeah, it was good. It was excellent.
I thought that when Sherwin asked him for about the umpteenth time, did Cadell say anything to you this morning that he might explode because I felt like it was almost insulting to his own...
Well, that's what the question he got asked every time, you know, ever since he took the lead on Paracombe. He always got asked,
was there any advice in your ear?
The obligatory Cadell question. I think he was completely over it, yeah. Mm. But I would say that Australian cycling fans are educated enough now to fathom a life without Cadell.
Yeah. Mm. And the greater sporting public. Like, you know, I grew up with Dennis Lilly, but guess what? There were plenty of other fast bowlers after him. And I don't care for cricket, but I know who they are. Mm. And the same's going to apply. Mm. You know, Cadell Evans will go and we'll know about Rowan Dennis and we'll know about Richie Port and we'll know about Rob Power and we'll know about some kid who's not even been born yet.
Well, we'll make sure that everyone knows about
it. Well, SBS is there doing their job.
Too. We will, but I mean, I still suppose wonder how much Channel 7, Channel 9. I'm not that, you know, those people are the arbiters of all success, but
it's a mix. You need
everyone's got to work with one another. If Victoria and major events says that they're against South Australian tourism, then it's a disaster. If they say, okay, great, let's all work together, fantastic. The Cadell Evans race, the Sun Tour is going to work with the Tour Down Under.
Yep.
If they become rivals, then it's got to be a more left wing world.
Okay. On that note, one final thought. We've got to quickly go through the. Some stuff about some social media of the week. This week, of course, if you haven't checked it out already, the Vine of the week, or the tweet / Vine of the week, undoubtedly we're going to give it to ourselves. And that was big. Woo! That was a crash that Phil actually ripped off. Immediately got off the coverage. We throw it up. 7 seconds, just the crash, the sound, everything captured it beautifully, and it went mental. Lots of retweets, lots of revines, and on Facebook too, it did very well. Apparently, people like to see crunching carbon and people going down very fast.
If motorsport tells us anything, that's true.
And finally, the comment of the week from CC Reader, that Cycling Central Reader, Skull. He was talking in relation to an article on Cadell Evans' retirement. He said, "Yes, Cadell, you're a class act in typical fashion. You left nothing in the tank at the Tour Down Under but display the humility, generosity of spirit and modesty to support Dennis. I'm stoked for you that you podiumed. It's been a great ride supporting you over the years, especially at your Grand Tour campaigns. We'll miss you and best of luck for the future." On that note, thanks for joining us. Don't forget, for all your news, blogs, videos, pics and more, we're always online creating more content at sbs.com.au / Cycling Central. Thanks, guys, and bye for now.
See ya.